Prologue.
I'm at the library in high school with a few of my boys, and we're trying to impress the ladies. So I grab a book called Hypnotism. Everybody's laughing, joking. I start reading it to the pretty girl sitting next to me. Everybody, be quiet. Be quiet. Every sound you hear, every breath you take will send you deeper and deeper into a hypnotic state. Every breath you take, every move you make, every vow you break, everybody starts laughing. But when I lift my eyes, she's frozen, staring in a trance. And I have no idea how to bring her out. Welcome to Snap Judgment. What is Snap Judgment? It's that left, that right jump. Or don't. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Stay tuned.
Come on in.
Get real close, because you're listening to Snap Judgment, the podcast. I'm your host, Glenn Washington, and today we're going to kick it off with a bookish beat because I need a jam I can read to. Watch it. Give me some. Now give me some out. That's DJ Smooth Grooves on the ones and twos. And we're going to keep him busy spinning stories on today's episode that give us that scholastic beat. Because today, Snap Judgment journeys into the place that masquerades as the most innocuous setting of all, yet in reality, teems with drama. I'm talking about your local public library, the place the haters are trying to shut down right now in order to save a few dollars. Don't let them do it. It's a magical place. Back when I was in high school, I was at the library doing my little dance for the ladies. I pulled a book off the shelf I was sure would draw their attention from the rest of my friends, especially the good-looking guy, Chris. It worked. The book was called Hypnotism. Let me hypnotize you, I said to the pretty girl next to me, Carrie. Beautiful Carrie. You can't hypnotize nobody. We'll see. Right there, chapter one, induction. There was a bunch of blah da blah about the need for necessary precautions and trained personnel and such, but I flipped right over that to the good stuff, and there it was. A sample induction for the purposes of hypnosis. I put on my best movie villain voice and began to read. First of all, I want you to relax. Relax. Shh. People were gathering around. Everybody, shut up. Shut up. Like I said, first of all, I want you to relax. We're going to take a few long, deep breaths. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale, breathing relaxation in with every breath. Inhale. Exhale. Deeper and deeper and deeper. Every sound you hear, every breath you take, you will find yourself becoming more deeper and deeper and deeply relaxed. Deeper and deeper. Every sound, every breath. And now, I got to break this story up a little bit because I do not want anybody out there in Radio Land to have any type of incident. DJ, give us a little something. Scratch me up something. Cool. Now, back to the story. And deeper and deeper. I read the induction exactly the way it was on the page. It read, and I quote, "You are now hypnotized." I looked up. And there, the pretty Carrie sat rocking just a little bit back and forth, back and forth, eyes almost closed, looking at nothing, nothing at all. No way! Everybody was laughing, cutting up. Carrie, stop playing, Carrie! If it had been anybody else, the performance would have been dismissed, but Carrie was incapable of holding a joke. Carrie, for real? Carrie, I'm waving my hands in front of her eyes like they do in the movies, all up in her face, and she's not moving. Then everybody's looking at me. Then everybody's grabbing for the book, but I am not having it. Let go. I turn to the next chapter, and it's something about methods to test the degree of trance. I read. I want you to imagine that something very, very heavy is attached to your eyelids. In fact, it's so heavy that even the thought of lifting your eyelids makes it heavier. Heavier. Extremely heavy now. Try to open your eyes. Carrie struggled to obey. Her eyebrows raised, but despite the strain, her eyelids remained closed. You may relax. Carrie relaxed. My status was growing by the minute. Carrie, I want you to hold out your right arm. She stuck it out. Now, Carrie, I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine that your arm is as rigid as a rock. In fact, I want you to imagine that your arm is made of solid, unbreakable steel. There is no force in the universe that can bend such powerful metal. Nothing at all can bend your arm. I strain theatrically for effect, but just as the book suggests, I can't bend the weak, skinny girl arm. Others, they come, they try, and the arm remains just as rigid for them as it had been for me. Now, Carrie, when you wake from this hypnotic trance, you won't remember a thing, but you will feel refreshed and invigorated. On the count of three, you will awake. One, two, three. Carrie opened her eyes and looked back at the faces staring at her. You were hypnotized. The crowd went wild. This happened in front of witnesses. The next day in school, I was going to be a hero, and no one was going to spoil my joy. I grabbed the book and ran to check it out. Turned out, my buddy Chris was thinking how to put a monkey wrench in my plans for domination. The library had two copies. I rushed home, eager to explore my newfound powers. My little brother Micah was barking like a dog within minutes. At school the next day, Chris successfully put a girl under and tied an imaginary helium balloon to her finger. Everybody clapped as her right hand kept rising above her head, despite her attempts to keep it in her lap. I seethed. Countered by hypnotizing three people at the same time and having them huddle together for warmth, convinced that it was 30 degrees below zero. Chris struck back later in the day with reports he had several people asking for water as if they were so very, very thirsty. The next day, I came back, and I came back hard. As the teacher had long ago abandoned control of history class, I used the time and went for the Holy Grail. Age regression. Okay, I want you to imagine yourself growing younger. Do you understand younger? When I give the signal, you will start to grow younger and younger at my command. 12. 10. You're now 8 years old. 5. 4. 3. Now, James, come up here and write your name on the blackboard. I can't. Why not? I don't know how to write my name. When the gasps subsided, my crown remained secure for several days. The sudden respect was palatable. I enjoyed every minute of it. Then, shocking news erupted from the drama class. Chris had done the unthinkable, the unbelievable, the unholy. Past life regression. I ran to see for myself, and there he was, taking age regression to its unnatural climax. 10, 8, 5, 4, 3 years old, 2, 1, 0. Imagine yourself surrounded by a sea of warm water. Now, I want you to see if you can feel a pull. If you feel a tug, if you feel the slightest whisper of a pull, I want you to swim toward it. And if you see light, I want you to swim toward that light. Some people have claimed they can re-enter the bodies of former selves through the aid of concentrated focus. I'm going to help you reach for one of those points right now on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. And wouldn't you know it, the girl emerged, blinked her eyes wide, and started speaking some kind of nonsense as if it were a real language. Man, I was so pissed. So pissed, but it was so cool. I had to hand it to him. All right, Chris. All right, dog. That was hot. That was hot. You got me. After doing something so spectacular, he could afford to throw me a bone. He had tickets to see Mr. Tom. Mr. Tom was the baddest, coolest stage hypnotist that we had ever just heard of. And it just so happened he was coming to Grand Valley State University, right outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he said, "You're driving. Deal." The show was amazing. Mr. Tom was amazing. He hypnotized 40 volunteer audience members at a toss. And then the fun started. People would suddenly feel compelled to storm the stage with their secret messages. Others screamed in alien tongues until others jumped up to translate. Make no mistake, for us, this was the highest form of high art. We couldn't wait to talk to him after the show and tell him how we were already following in his footsteps. He was mobbed after the program, so we bid our time. We were practitioners of the craft and didn't want him to confuse us with groupies. He noticed us waiting, and the great man came over to us. "Thanks for coming out, fellas. How can I help you?" We told him everything. We told him how we'd been practicing hypnotism, how we'd already gotten some great tricks under our belt, how the show had really inspired us to keep trying for higher level effects. I was about to say something else cool about us, and Tom exploded. You idiots! You idiots! This is not a toy! This is not something that jackasses can play at!" I don't know what I expected his reaction to be, but this was not going well. Listen to me. This tool short circuits all the protective covering people have built up over lifetimes. You like to fool with age regression? Did you see how I asked everybody, how many of you have had a happy childhood? How many had a happy childhood? If they hesitated for even a second, I made them sleep. Only the happy got to play the good time games. What if I brought someone to age 3, but in their house when they were 3, maybe things weren't going so well with the new stepdad. Maybe they were locked in the closet. Maybe whatever. People are carrying around stuff, just barely holding it together, and they don't need you clowns screwing with them. You idiots, you promised me right here and right now you're going to knock this crap off. "Yes, Mr. Tom, sir. Yes, Mr. Tom, sir." The next day, early, brothers in crime, we are both at the library. We had tasted from the fruit of the tree of knowledge and paid her horrible price to restore order to the universe. I broke the first law of the library. I wrote in the book. In red marker and large letters, I wrote, "Before you do any of this stuff, call me first." And just in case, just in an abundance of caution, if anyone out there is still hypnotized, One, two, three, you're out. All you remember is that Snap Judgment is your favorite radio program of all time. DJ Smooth Grooves, give me a little something, and let's take us out. Libraries. Libraries. How very public radio of you to do a show on libraries. Some of you are thinking to yourselves right now, but how dare you question our anti-authoritarian tendencies. Friends, it is my mission today on Snap Judgment to convince you that this lowly edifice struggling for proper respect is in actuality a mystery box full of secrets, both dangerous and sexy, waiting for you to uncover. So say it like you mean it. Library. Trust me, we've got some stories. Snap Judgment. We'll be right back.
Joe Golling is a very talented artist, animator, and filmmaker that we recently had the pleasure of collaborating with. Joe brought to life on the silver screen Glenn's story that you just heard, You Are Getting Sleepy. And this very week, you yourself can sit back and watch the magic by visiting worldcompass.org. The short film, again, is called You Are Getting Sleepy. Look for it at worldcompass.org. You are listening to Snap Judgment from NPR.
Snap Judgment. My name is Glenn Washington, and hold on tight. Watch your leg there. Watch your leg. We're about to get into the way, way back machine, because back in the day, it wasn't so easy for a young black man to just walk up in a library and check out a book by a real-life African-American author. No. Especially not some obscure yarn spinner like Frank Yerby. No way. It just was not done. Thanks to StoryCorps, we lay down a tale on Snap Judgment about how, in spite of everything, a young man managed to get his read on.
I was a rather troubled high school senior at the time, about 16 years old, and I spotted this book that looked rather risque called The Treasure of Pleasant Valley. On the cover was a drawing of a woman who appeared to be wearing something that was basically see-through, but the symbolism was really great for me at that age of 16. And then I realized if I read the book, two of my classmates, girls, were volunteering in the library, and if they saw me taking out a book, they'd tell the boys, and then my reputation would be down because I was reading books, and I wanted them to know that all I could do is fight and cuss. And so finally it come to me, just steal a book. And so when I finished the book in about a week or two, I brought it back, and when I put it back, that was another book by Frank Yerby. So I thought maybe I'll read that too, so I took it under my jacket, and later I brought it back. And that was another book by Frank Yerby, so I took it. And I think that semester I read four books by Frank Yerby, and several years, 13 to be exact, we were at a gathering at my high school for my class reunion, and the teacher who had been the librarian, Mrs. Mildred Grady, was there. She told me that she saw me take that book when I first took it. She said her first thought was to go over and tell him, boy, you don't have to steal a book. You can check them out. They're free. And then she realized what my situation was, and I could not let anybody know I was reading. So she said that she decided that if a old boy would read a book, she and Mrs. Saunders would drive to Memphis and find another one for me to read, and they would put it in the exact same place where the one I'd taken was. And every time I took one out, they headed to Memphis to find another one. Now, you got to understand that this was not an easy matter then, because this is 1957 and 58, and black authors were not especially available, number one. And number two, Frank Yerby was not such a widely known author. And number three, they had to drive all the way to Memphis to find it. And I credit Mrs. Grady for getting me in the habit of enjoying reading so that I was able to go to law school and survive. Mm-hmm. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, that was Judge Ollie Neal. And yes, I did say Judge Ali Neal talking to his daughter, Karama, in Little Rock, Arkansas. Thank you, StoryCorps. You're listening to Snap Judgment.
I'm looking for a book on television, but I forgot.
Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story. You know.
I think we can help you.
But it's so hard to find things in this place.
Hard to find things? It's super easy to find things at the library. You just use the Dewey Decimal System.
Why are we wasting our time with the Dewey Decimal System when your system is so much easier? Much easier. We'll just put the books anywhere.
It's pretty interesting how enduring that stereotype of the librarian is.
We don't care, right? Isn't that right?
Oh, the buns and the dusty stacks.
I'm a children's librarian, but I was doing something where I reached up and a little boy saw the tattoo on my side and he said, I seen your tattoo, that's tight. And I said, thank you. And he said, my daddy got the devil licking some
You know, I don't know. We do wear some cool shoes, but yeah, no, we don't shush. I have been shushed so much more in my career than I have shushed. I'm Rachel Bridgewater. I'm the electronic resources librarian at Reed College. I think librarians are like the least judgmental group of people you could hope to find.
Have you a real love of books and learning? You do? That's good.
Hear that, everybody? Our friend here has given us a great idea. We'll just put the books any damn place we choose.
If you come to the reference desk asking for information because you want to find out how to get the government to stop stealing your thoughts.
Do you like all kinds of people?
We're going to value that just as high as somebody coming to the desk wanting information about Alexander the Great for their paper.
People in all stations of life.
Because, you know, your need is equal.
You do? That's wonderful. Because when you have these two important qualifications, love for books and love for people, you may well consider the vocation of a librarian.
Whose guardians feel most successful when they are sharing the treasure with the whole world.
When I worked in government documents up on the fifth floor, we tended to get a lot of lawyers, would-be lawyers, because all the law books are up there. And I saw this woman come in, she got off the elevator, and she had kind of a black pantsuit, very professional looking. And I immediately thought lawyer. This is a lawyer's coming in to ask about something. And she got a little closer. I realized she looked kind of young. And I thought, okay, law student, Hastings law student. And this is like in 3 or 4 seconds. I'm just processing it. And she's got her legal pad, her yellow legal pad. And it looks like it's filled up. Every line is filled up. And she's flipping over and all the... Just thought, man, she's got a whole notebook full of notes. And she came up to the desk, and I said, hi, what can I do for you? And she started talking. I couldn't really understand what she was talking about. And she wanted a book to get the Bulgarian KGB to stop beaming gamma rays into her head every time she left the building. I said, we probably don't have anything that specific. But we have books on the KGB. We have books on the FBI. We have books on the CIA. Some of them are like how-to books and how-not-to books. And she was just kind of frazzled. And she said, okay, and I said, well, I'll show you where there are. No, I'll go find them. And that's when I got a look at her legal pad, and it was just line after line after line of scribbles. No words, no letters, no sentences, just scribbles.
And then finally she got some medication and she became normal.
It's a certain kind of crazy that has that need filled by info, fueled by info, yeah.
Yes, there are many aspects to this worthwhile occupation, all of vital importance in the nation's life. Modest rural library must be different from a city library, offering a multitude of services to meet the needs of a great variety of persons.
My name is Shelley Cocking.
How long have you been at the library?
I've been here at the San Francisco Public for 15 years.
And what do you do for San Francisco Public?
Currently, I'm the manager of the Borrower Services Department. I work at the reference desk on the first floor, one hour a day. And we get quite an array of characters here at the Maine. I mean, we're in the Tenderloin, which is kind of a rough neighborhood, so obviously those people come inside. So I was on the reference desk, and a gentleman came up, and he said that recently there had been all these rumors going around his building about a pedophile living there. And he had heard that you can actually look up someplace on the internet and find out if, you know, there really is one and, you know, what they've done and stuff like that. And he seemed very concerned. He said, all his neighbors are talking about this. And he was shocked. So I said, sure, no problem. This is called Megan's Law. And I, you know, turned my monitor so it was facing out to the atrium so I could walk him through, you know, finding Megan's Law on the internet. And I got his address from him and typed it in. And, of course, when the picture of the name of the person who does live at his location, who was a pedophile, popped up, it was actually a picture of the patron standing in front of me. And he, of course, turned around quickly and went running out the front door of the library.
The many different libraries in our country have various functions, depending on their location.
Special thanks to the San Francisco Public Library, especially Trent Garcia, Megan Anderson, Shelley Calkin, and Patrick Shea. The San Francisco Public Library is the very first library with a social worker on staff. That tells you something about the caliber of the people working there. They even open their doors to us. Told us stories all day long, and we cannot thank them enough. Thank you.
You will derive satisfaction from a knowledge that your work is vital and essential in forming the kind of world in which you want to live.
Hello?
Snap Judgment Storyline. 888-304-SNAP. I'm Glenn Washington. Now, remember, leave us your name, your number, and the story you're about to tell. You've got 3 minutes. Peace out.
Hi, Snap Judgment. I have a story for you, which takes place when I was in college studying music. In order to make some extra money, I was working in the music library, and the name of our building, the music building, was called Jennings. Jennings was basically a converted mansion donated by a Mrs. Jennings, who had given it, you know, when she died in her will, and I think it was several decades ago. And my friends and I would, when we would go practice, and a lot of times we'd go and practice late at night, we would hear strange sounds or feel like someone was behind us and turn around and there would be no one there. I decided one night that I was going to go practice, but my friends didn't want to come with me, and I didn't want to be creeped out by going to the third floor, which is where the practice rooms were and where I had experienced those feelings that maybe someone was there. And I had the key to the music library where I worked, so I decided I was going to go in there and practice. So I opened the library and went in and started practicing on the old piano there, and I kept hearing these weird sounds and creakings and like a feeling like someone else was in the room. And I would kept turning around and kept getting like the heebie-jeebies. And after a while, this feeling just kept growing and growing in intensity, and I started getting really scared and freaked out. So I decided it's time to leave Jennings. This was probably about 2 a.m. So I grabbed my jacket. And this jacket was one of my favorites at the time. It was a brown suede bomber jacket that I used to wear all the time. I put that on, and I left the building and jumped on my bike and started pedaling away. And as I was riding away, I had this feeling like something was chasing me, something was behind me. And I turned, and there was nothing there, but there was definitely like an energy I could feel. So I started pedaling faster and faster and faster. And I felt like this thing, whatever it was behind me and chasing me faster and faster until I felt like it was like right up upon me. So I pedaled and pedaled and pedaled as fast as I could. Went back to my dorm house, and I went directly to my friend's room. I said, oh my gosh, you won't believe what just happened. I was in Jennings, and I felt like something was chasing me all the way down the hill. till I got to the dorm house. And as I was recounting this story, I took off my jacket, and she goes, "What's that on your jacket?" I was like, "I don't know." And I looked, and there was this gooey, sticky substance on the back of my jacket. Like, nothing, I couldn't figure out where this substance could have come from, and all I could think of was Ghostbusters and ectoplasm. I ended up saying to my friend, "I think that I've just been slimed by a ghost." And she said, "Well, maybe the ghost of Mrs. Jennings didn't want you, you know, practicing in the music library." So that's my story. Hope you enjoyed it.
He slimed me.
That's great! Actual physical contact! Can you move?
I feel so funky.
Who you gonna call? Snap Judgment. Now, for something weird and it don't look good, you know what it is. It's that Snap Judgment. Call, write, email, smoke signals. If you have a story to tell, you know the address, snapjudgment.org. For today's episode, we asked real-life librarians to tell us their stories of life in the stacks, and Torleif Borstein hit us back with a tale of taking his book cart out of the safe confines of the public library. Executive producer Mark Ristich spoke with Torleif and brings us this story.
I am what they call a vocational assistant. It's somebody in the library who basically can do anything. I'm sort of the lowest man on the totem pole, which means that I'm available for whatever task anybody decides. One day, they come to me and they say, "Torleif, look, we need you to go to the jail today to take some books over because Louise, the woman who usually does this job, is sick."
Go to the jail.
Go to the jail. It's a lot different than just hanging out at the library all day. So, you know, I've got some thoughts racing through my head. I mean, I'm a big guy, but I've never been in a jail. I don't know anything about what jail is like. I can only imagine what I've seen on TV. So, I'm a little freaked out. So I walk over there with my books, and I'm led into the jail. You know, the guards do all the usual things. They pat you down, they check you for sharp objects, they take your keys away. I'm beginning to realize that this is not a joke. I mean, I'm going to be released somewhere in this building with a bunch of guys that I don't know, who have done I don't know what. So they open the door, and they let me into what they refer to as a pod. It's like a rotunda. It's just a large, round room, and there's a hole in the middle. And you look down in that hole, and what you see is stairs that go all the way down. It's probably about 3 stories. It's literally 30 feet down there. The guard is at a desk down there sitting. And there's nobody around him. I mean, there's no inmates down there. They're all upstairs.
Right, they don't want to hang around the guard.
Yeah, they're not hanging around with the guard. They're not palling around with him. Yeah. They walk me in. They shut the door behind me, and the thing really, it makes quite a sound.
It slams.
Yeah, I mean, it's final. I mean, it's like you hear that door behind you, and you feel like the first thing you want to do is turn around and throw your hands on it and say, "Let me out of here." No, 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 no.
But you have a guard right with you, so it's not a big deal.
Well, no. In fact, the guard stays outside the door. They close that door behind me. I am, for all intents and purposes, by myself now on this floor with 25 to 30 guys.
So what do these guys look like? Bankers? Or?
Yeah, no. The funny thing is, I mean, they're all like me. They're, you know, they're 6 feet, 6'1", broad-chested, big guys, a lot of shaved heads, a lot of tattoos. So
they see the book cart and they say, "All right, you know, here's the book cart guy, welcome."
Yeah, no, not really. So I wheel the book cart over into that open space. And the first thing they do is every single one of them, to the man, looks me up and down. So now they're circling. And, you know, you got 25 guys walking around you, and they're getting closer and closer to me, and they all look like they are ready to punch me in the face.
Really?
Yeah, they do. It's intense because I think the thing that happens automatically is that they're trying to test me physically. They want to see how far they can go to push me and see if I will shrink.
So are they coming up to you?
I mean, they're walking around me, and they're definitely making contact. I mean, you know, walking a little too close. Oh, sorry, you know, that kind of thing. It's not good. I mean, it made me realize that I was in a actually very threatening situation. These guys were not there to be my buddy. They're going to put me in my place. It's their job at this point to put me in my place. So now I have to figure out what to do. So I'm thinking and thinking and thinking, and I have to do my job. I mean, I'm there to do this job. So finally, I just speak up and say, guys, look, I need you to stand in a line because I need to write down each individual name that takes a book on this list. I was told that that's what I need to do. And so that's what I'm going to do. And I just made sure to keep as much eye contact as I could when I said it because I didn't want to seem like a shrinking violet. I didn't want to seem like I was intimidated. I just wanted to stand up, hold my chest up a little bit and say, this is what we're doing next. Get in line. If you want to get your book, you're going to get in line. To my surprise, they got in line. I mean, they just kind of fell right in line. It was like the military. It was crazy. I've never seen anything like that. I would have never imagined that these guys who had just been literally surrounding me, trying to stare me down, would then suddenly just listen to me and fall in line. And so there was. They were standing in line waiting for me to call the first guy over. So I called one guy at a time, and, you know, they asked me questions. They wanted to know what kind of books I like to read, what kind of authors I like to read, if I were looking at this cart, what I would recommend. I mean, this was literally like being in the library, except that I was in the jail. All that happened pretty fast. I mean, it all happened within 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, from walking into the room to feeling like I was about to get beat down, to getting these guys to stand in line, to actually distributing books to them, it happened very fast. It was, you know, 15 minutes, let's say. But I did realize that most of these guys, as I talked to them, were guys that I would just meet on the street. You know, these guys could be, for all intents and purposes, my friends.
So you now all of a sudden you have sympathy for these guys, right?
As I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy, I literally, I'm walked out that door, into the hallway, and suddenly, like, I don't know, like a bolt of lightning or something. I don't know what happens, but I two hands on my shoulders and I'm shoved to the ground by two guards that were basically at the door, took me by the shoulders, shoved me to the ground. My book cart is there in front of me. I'm basically hiding behind my book cart, holding on to it. Guards are running by me with weapons drawn. And I'm like, what is going on? And the guy behind me says, look, a fight has broken out in the other pod. We need to get you out of here as fast as we can. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Guards rushing by, pistol drawn. They're ready to, you know, put the hammer down on somebody. I don't know what's going on, but you always see in the movies that, you know, guys manage to create weapons out of, like, toothbrushes and things. I mean, you just never know. Like, I don't want to get shanked in the jail while I'm delivering books. I don't want to find myself in a situation where I'm surrounded by 30 guys and two guys decide they don't like each other and everybody's taking sides and I'm in the middle with my book cart. Like, what am I supposed to do? There's nothing I can do. And the funny thing is there's no noise. Like, there's no alarm. There's no siren. There's no nothing alerting anybody. So obviously somebody has contacted them from the pod. The guard who's on duty or whatever has contacted or done some sort of silent thing wherein the backup runs down the hall and breaks into that room and figures out who's responsible for what's going on. I certainly didn't think about it being a roller coaster when I walked in. But that's what it felt like. It felt like being really high and really low and really high and then completely hitting one of those high spots on a roller coaster where you're going down full blast. You don't know what's going to happen. You start screaming your head off. Like, I literally didn't know what I was feeling at that point when I was pushed out the door. I'm really happy that I didn't get over there. I'm really happy that for whatever reason, I took a little extra time in that first pod that I didn't end up in the second one. Yeah, it was an eye-opening day.
We're hiding somewhere between the self-help section and those old magazines. This library mystery box still has a couple more stories rattling around inside. Don't miss a moment, just 60 seconds. 60 seconds. And Snap Judgment continues. I'm Glenn Washington. Stay tuned.
This week on the podcast, we're playing one of our favorite old school episodes, The Library, because All of us here at Snap Judgment, the entire crew, are out of the office. We're in Denver, Colorado, hanging out with public radio program directors from across the country. We're singing and dancing and throwing down some seriously fabulous stories, playing some special Snap Judgment animations and little movies, and doing what we do best, entertaining. So dear listeners, the time is ripe. If you have yet to hear Snap Judgment the radio show on your local public radio station where it belongs, call up your local program director and let them know that you want to hear Snap Judgment on the airwaves, putting the public back in public media.
Welcome back to Snap Judgment. I'm Glenn Washington, and we've been having our fun and good times and all, getting a little crazy in the library, but now we're going to take it down a notch and visit with our good friend, Benjamin Walker. Now, some people know Benjamin Walker as the Muhammad Ali of storytelling. Others know him as the Bill Clinton of dance. I've always thought of him as the Wayne Gretzky of hairdressing. We're turning the dial over to Benjamin Walker. Wait a minute, just a second here. There we go. You can bet that Benjamin Walker's been to a library or two. Snap Judgment.
Over the holidays, I went home to check on my father. Not something I wanted to do. Every year it seems to get worse and worse. Every year he seems to get further and further away from the things that are most important to him. We've never been close, and about 5 years ago, he decided to become a born-again Orthodox Jew, which was kind of the last straw. This is when he became a total alien to me. My mom, who was Jewish, is a born-again Christian, and Dad was an altar boy as a kid. So maybe if they were still together, then I guess it might actually be kind of funny. But he is not with anybody. He is totally and completely alone. He's been living in squalor in this rundown basement apartment for the past 14 years, ever since wife number two kicked him out. About 2 years ago, he almost got evicted, and that's why my sister and I are now paying his rent. This actually doesn't bother me. When I was in high school, I stole a very important wine bottle from him, and I drank it with my friends in the parking lot. When I send his landlord a check every month, I think about how sad he looked when I lied to his face about it. Last year, the trip home almost killed me. I had totally become the parent. We went to Costco to get basic necessities. We went to Target to buy new clothes. We got a cleaning service for the apartment. I took him to the welfare office to sign him up for food stamps. And I paid his bill at the kosher deli where he'd run up this giant tab. My dad has never been good at paying bills. He just throws them in the trash. That's why the phone bill got shut off about 10 years ago. He's also run up thousands of dollars in credit card bills. But his paychecks are so small now, they can't really take much from him. He used to do okay, managing this delicatessen, but currently, it's a downhill spiral. For a while, he was gathering shopping carts from the parking lot at the Home Depot, and now he's working the night shift at UPS. Of course, he says that getting up at 4 in the morning to take the bus to lift boxes at UPS is great, because it gives him time to think about all his ideas. My father has always defined himself as a man of big ideas. And this is why I am such a fan of little ideas. Because having listened to someone go on and on and on about ideas that never amounted to anything, I've been totally scared to take on anything I can't do myself on a laptop or with pen and paper. There is one tactile connection I do have to my father, though. Books. Like my father, I have a lot of books in my apartment, and over the past few years I've been trying to keep our conversations focused on stuff he's reading, rather than the ideas stuff. And come on, reading is certainly an act of doing. my father lives near a Barnes & Noble, so he spends a lot of time there reading all the magazines and the newspapers. And he looks at all the new books. Of course, he can't afford the new books, but there is the library. Besides the few times he buys a phone card, the only time I really hear from my father is when he emails from a computer at the library. So, on this last trip, we once again go to the Target, we once again go to the laundromat, we once again go to the welfare office, and we once again go to the kosher deli. But this time, we also go to the library, because my father lets it slip that he can't check out books anymore, because he owes the library money, like a lot. This, I find, incredibly tragic. I mean, how can you be a man of ideas without a library card? So I drive him to the library, and we go to the counter, and the librarian pulls up his records. It turns out that my father owes a mere $60. Late fees, of course, but late fees from 1999. So that means he hasn't checked out a single book in like 10 years. I do not pay the library bill. I want to, but I realize that it actually isn't something important to him. And if there's one thing I have learned from my father, it's that you gotta keep your eyes on the thing that is most important.
Benjamin Walker has a brilliant new show on WFMU called Too Much Information, and you are in luck. Dear listeners, he has a podcast. Again, that's Too Much Information, Benjamin Walker, storyteller extreme.
Let us consider some of the various types of libraries and start with the greatest of all.
I love books. So do you. You're listening to public radio. And I always wanted to have a personal library with all the books I've read spread out on several handsome cedar bookshelves for all the world to see. The problem was I was itinerant, sleeping on other people's couches. The thing about big personal libraries is they don't travel well. So I kept several stacks of books in my mother's basement, waiting for the day I could rescue them and place them on that handsome cedar bookshelf in the den. The den. Anyway, that was my idea. Those books were the only things I actually owned that wouldn't fit into the back of my Civic. And they were from everywhere, about everything. The collection itself formed a type of travel journal. There was a series about acupressure I'd gotten from a Japanese flea market. A Thai monk gave me a beautiful book on vegetarian cooking. I've got this thing for great apes and had volumes about orangutans, gorillas, chimpanzees. I collected books of magic and books about sailing, Nubia. I found this wonderful book of Braille. I can't read Braille, but it was cool anyway. Every book was a gift to an older me. Some imaginary future me that would have the time to sit down and read and chill. I was on the other side of the world, eating an apple when my mother called. "Hey, Mom, what's up?" There was something going on, and I could hear the shouting, clapping, the singing all in the background. "What's that noise, Mama?" "Well, I just wanted you to know some news." "Uh-oh. See, I've been having this bad feeling.
like Satan was walking around my house in his bare feet looking through my cabinets. Right. So the church ladies came on over and we got to divining where the evil was coming from. What do you mean, divining the evil? Yeah, we got to divining the evil and we found it. And that's why I'm calling you, Mother. Because I found your book, son. We found your evil stain. The ladies told me. They told me, Lord knows, they told me I didn't want to believe. But boy, what have you been into? Mother, what are you talking about? I said I found your book. Your satanic verses. Satanic verses, son. How you going to have the verses of Satan up in my house? It took me a minute. It took me a long minute. Mother, I think there's been some confusion. We fitting to burn all this hair. All this hair is going in the fire. Mother, do not burn my books. Under any circumstance, do not do it. See, all this going up in the fire. Mother, the book Satanic Verses is not what you think it is. It is not the verses of Satan. Salman Rushdie wrote it. I know what Satanic Verses are when I see them, boy. How you gonna pollute my house with the devil's scripture? All right. Go ahead. Burn Satanic Verses. Burn it. I never even liked that book. But leave everything else alone. All this has got the same taint. The devil been through it all. The lady felt it, and I felt it. It's got to be cleansed in the fire. Mother, do not burn my books. Do not do it. I'm just calling to let you know. You need to get right with yourself. Don't do it, Mom. Mom, do not do it. Goodbye, son. Your mother loves you very much. Mother, click. I called her again and again. I knew she wasn't going to answer, and I called her anyway. Again and again and again. 3 days later, she called me. Hello, son. How you doing? I wanted to ask her if she went through with it. Did she really murder my books? How could she do it? How could she? But I already knew. No library, no letters to an older me, and certainly no den. I'm fine, Mom. I'm fine. How are you? You have just turned the page on the Snap Judgment Library episode or read the last chapter or whatever. There's no more Snap Judgment this week, but look, don't you cry. Don't you just remember that Snap Judgment was produced by me, Glenn Washington. But never alone, friends, never alone. Did I mention Uber producer Mark Ristich, senior producer, God of War and Radio, Roman Mars. And what's that, lights out? Battery run dry? Not if Rebecca Megahertz has anything to say about it. The Crack Snap intern crew, Ben Bricasio, Rita Daniels, Will Urbina, and Sarah Jesse. Hugs and fat wet kisses to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. SnapJudgment.org is powered by those mad geniuses at Media Cannon. Don't sleep on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. And even though this is not the news, not even close, this is NPR, National Public Radio. This has been a Snap Judgment production. The producer of this very podcast, listening, judging, and condemning all she hears out of my mouth right now, is Snap Judgment's own podcast producer, Rita Daniels.